Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Beware the Board, a horror podcast where we watch a randomly selected horror movie every single week. I'm Bob.
And I'm Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Welcome.
Woo!
If it sounds like we are excited to be here, that's just because we're very tired.
I'm excited to be here. What are you talking about?
We are starting late.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
But I am excited, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, new season still, kind of. We've only covered one of the categories so far.
Exactly.
Which was clowns. And it was kind of a clown movie last week, Hell House LLC.
I would say it was more of a clown movie than I thought it was going to be.
That is fair. The clown freaked you out, at least.
The clown did scare me, so I'll count it.
It wasn't even the right clown that scared you.
Nope.
It was Joey the clown.
It's very scary.
With that being said, we have two categories left. But first, we got to do news. I actually have some this week.
Yeah, Ben was like, let me do my news first. So take it away, Benjamin.
Because I never have news, so I get to do mine first, so Bob doesn't steal it. First of all, Nosferatu's coming out on the 25th of December.
Yes, it is.
So if you want to go see Count Orlok in theaters, you can go see Count Orlok in theaters.
For the first time since the 1930s.
Well, that's probably not true. I'm sure they've screened Nosferatu since.
Yeah. But you know what I mean.
But now you can see him with sound.
Yeah, with sound and played by someone else.
Additionally, for all you Godzilla fans out there.
Oh, I don't know what this is.
Really?
I have something completely separate that you're going to be so excited about.
Godzilla versus Biollante now just got a new release from Criterion Collection in March. So they have the standard Blu-ray and the 4K, which is super cool.
Fuck yeah, dude.
The only disc that's been available recently has been Japanese.
Okay.
Also, they released a teaser trailer for, I think, the new Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, that was the thing I was going to talk about.
I knew it. I just saw it. But it features everyone's favorite, Tarman.
Yeah, so I'll just piggyback off of this, because I was going to talk about this anyway. Yeah, they released a teaser trailer for the new Return of the Living Dead movie, which is crazy they're making a new one. I really thought this was a dead IP.
No.
Like, I really thought that it was going to kick the bucket.
You think any IP is dead in the modern market?
No, but like, it's been 20 fucking years.
How many years had it been since the last Star Wars film before they did those new ones?
That's fair. Well, the prequels.
Well, the prequels, yeah. Or, like, the Indiana Jones films.
True. I don't know. I just feel like this was one of those IPs that was so...
What about fucking Nosferatu?
Well, Nosferatu was, like, culturally significant. You know what I mean? Like, in, like, a general audience sort of way. But Return of the Living Dead feels so, like, hyper-specific to people like us that enjoy horror movies and do things like this. That it just felt so removed from the cultural zeitgeist that I didn't think anyone cared about it. Like, aside from old fans, you know what I mean?
That's fair.
So, this new film is going to be directed by Steve Walsh. He directed Muck, Kill Her Goats. It is a Christmas-themed Return of the Living Dead sequel, by the way.
Yeah, I did see that.
Which was pretty cool.
I think everyone got so hyped about the Art the Clown stuff. Hollywood was like... Obviously, it's the Christmas element of this that's making it work.
So, apparently, the new story takes place in a small Pennsylvania town over Christmas, and it's set in 1985, 18 months after the events of the original film. Fans of the film will know not to expect to see any returning characters given their terrible fights in the original. So, it is a sequel that takes place in the same universe after the first one.
I don't know how that works.
I don't either.
Canonically, at the end of the first movie, it's straight up the end of the world.
We got nuked.
No, but like, it repeats the cycle.
Yeah.
The rain.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. According to Walsh, this is not a reboot or remake, but a brand new adventure, and it won't in any way trample the original film's legacy, which is great, because that's why I hate Return of the Living Dead Part 2. That movie is not good.
I thought you liked that movie when we watched it. You were defending it so much.
Shut up, Ben. Shut up. Audiences can expect to be welcomed back into the dark, humorous, sexy, edgy, traction-fueled world horror fans first encountered in 1985. Additionally, the production has called in special effects legend Tony Gardner from Zombieland, Hocus Pocus, and the Chucky franchise to establish the zombie look for the story, which is cool. I'm excited about that. Getting people who are experienced and coming into a known franchise works. Like, I feel like if you're coming into a franchise that has standards, because I mean, like, look, I don't love Return of the Living Dead Part 2. The zombies in that look okay, but the first one, they look incredible, and in the third one, they're also pretty good. So I'm hoping that we get some sort of standard here. We haven't seen, what, 4 and 5? Because this will be 6?
I think so.
Right?
I think that's right.
Because there's Rave to the Grave, and then, what is it, Necropolis or something?
I think it's Necropolis, then
Rave to the Grave. So this will be 6.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's such a perfect, like, horror comedy mm-hmm. that the tone's so hard to, like, nail down. And so I'll just be interested to see what they do with it. I'm just excited to see more Triox and 245 Zombies.
No, me too. I'm really excited. I'm sorry, hype
345.
I'm hype as fuck for this movie. Yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully it's good. We will see. Okay, last thing. Do you know who Zach Bagans is? Off the top of your head, do you know that name?
No.
Do you not know who that is?
No.
Okay.
I don't remember anything.
Zach Bagans is the lead dude from Ghost Adventures. Like, the main guy.
Oh, okay.
He's starting a dive into horror cinema. Apparently, he's starting his own horror production company called Scarehouse Films, which is funded solely by him. Like, the startup cost is all being covered by him, all the money.
Jesus Christ, that's impressive.
Yeah. And they're working on 3 independent horror movies, like, that they're going to put out in the next year. All, like, worked on, produced by him, worked on by him, funded by him, the whole company. And if, you know, you Ghost Adventure fans are worried about how this will affect the show, don't worry, it won't. Because he signed a deal with Discovery for Ghost Adventures to go through all the way 2025, and all of his films are also being produced by Discovery. So, assumedly, they'll work with him on his schedule, and everything will be okay.
Okay, can
I'm excited about this, because it's kind of cool.
Can I admit something?
Yeah.
I totally know who you're talking about now. You said Ghost Adventures?
Yep.
And I was thinking that ghost movie we watched?
Oh, Grave Encounters?
And I thought you were talking about the lead actor from Grave Encounters. Nope. No, this makes much more sense now. Yes,
it does. Yeah. But that's cool. I like seeing people who are in the horror space getting involved in production and stuff, because I think that is a good thing overall, because they're fans. And who better to make a movie for fans than fans themselves? You know what I mean? So I think that's pretty sweet.
I guess.
I don't know. I'm a little excited about it.
That's fair.
But I think that's it.
Okay. Well, then we'll get into the actual podcast part of the podcast, since Bob usually likes me to do this for the first 3 or so episodes. We do this board, like this season with a board. This season we have 3 categories. We have my category, which was the best one, as it always is.
That's not true. You pitched some bad categories,
Arnold
dog.
Schwarzenegger. And then we have a random, which was vampires. I think that was mine from a long time ago. And then we have Bob's category this season, which technically, in some ways, is also mine. And that was clowns.
Yeah. Well, I was indecisive, and I let you make the final choice.
Yeah. What was your other option?
Werewolves.
That one in a random. Now, Bob, last week you chose...
Clowns.
Clowns as your random category.
And I didn't regret it. I was surprised. That movie may have been very scary, but I survived.
I think you should choose Arnold Schwarzenegger this week.
I know what you think I should choose, but I...
Just because I'm tired and I have the energy for that.
No.
I'm not sure if I have the energy for a good vampire film.
We're doing vampires, Ben. I don't give a
Boo.
Fuck about your mental state. Look, I was nice to you a bunch last season. Not anymore.
No, you weren't.
Yes, I was. You kept being like, pick this. And I go, okay, I'll pick that. Not this time, bozo. I'm picking vampires.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Nope, vampires.
All right.
I have all 3 spots.
That is a factoid.
What's in spot number 1, Ben?
In spot number 1? Are you sure?
What is in spot number 1 in
vampires? Because last time, it didn't seem like you were very sure.
I'm super sure. I'm 100% positive that I want to watch whatever is in spot number 1 in vampires.
All right. Spot 1. So today, we are watching a film from 2008.
Oh, Pog.
Titled, Let the Right One In.
Okay. This makes sense as a vampire movie, as a title. We'll see what happens.
Why? Why does it make sense as a vampire movie?
Well, because like the classic vampire trope of like, if you invite someone in, a vampire can't get in your house unless you invite them in.
You're right. Never have a horny mom. That's how you avoid vampires.
In the 80s, yes, that's how you avoid vampires. Nowadays, you know, maybe vampires are a little more tough than that.
In either case, description, sometimes. All you need is a friend.
Okay. Fuck.
Length, it's 1 hour and 54 minutes long.
Oh, it's 2 hours. God damn it.
It's rated R.
Oh, thank God.
Review scores. IMDb gave it a 7.8 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
Tomato meter score of 98%.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah.
Audience score of 90%. Metacritic score of 82%. Ooh. And a user score of 81%.
I'm glad the Metacritic paid off this week. I'm glad that that came back around. Yeah. It was actually effective now.
For awards, it has 76 wins and 58 nominations.
Holy shit! We're watching like a really good movie.
And that includes a 2010 BAFTA nomination for Best Film Not in the English Language, because this is a foreign film.
Oh, that's so cool.
Now, there's a bunch of actors in this movie, and I didn't write them all down, so I just wrote down the main actors, like the main two, because I have trouble pronouncing names. There's Kare Hedebrandt as Oscar. He played Tobias from Acta Maniscor. He was on 20 episodes between 2012 and 2014, and then Lina Leanderson as Eli. They're Ranja and the Arbiter. Those names sounded interesting. That's because this movie is from Sweden.
It's a Swedish film?
Yes.
Fuck yes, bro. That's awesome.
Directors Thomas Alfredson. He also directed Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
I've heard that movie's good.
Now you have this to look forward to. Writers John Advide Lindqvist.
These Swedish names are going to be the end of you, dog.
I think I got pretty close with that one. As close as I'm going to get. He also wrote Border in 2018. Mm. Estimated budget is $4 million, with a box office turnout of $11.2 million. So pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
And going to try and pronounce the original Swedish title here.
Oh, God.
We're going to fail, but Lat den rot komma in.
Okay.
I said that. That sounded more Russian to me than it did Swedish, but...
I'm not a linguist. Go
let it go. Tagline? I don't know, man. Stuff was in Swedish. I don't know if they had one.
Okay. Understandable. I get it.
As far as facts go, principal photography took place in 2007 in Luleå, with additional filming in Blackeberg, which I believe are both in Sweden. And it looks like stuff like that took a little bit. So casting for lead actors took almost a year.
That's wild.
Which is an impressive amount of time. And more importantly, it was an open casting call across of all of Sweden.
Damn, so you could just audition and just show up.
Yeah, anyone could audition.
That's cool.
I think the actors we ended up getting were not experienced.
Hmm.
They were just chosen because they were the best fit for the characters, which is always good to see. Maybe a good indication of why you win a lot of awards.
Yeah, well, it probably helps.
In either case, the film eventually premiered at the Gothenburg Film Festival on the 26th of January 2008, where it received the Nordic Film Prize. And because Americans don't like watching foreign films and, you know,
no.
other languages,
no!
an American remake of the film was made titled Let Me In, which was released in 2010.
Why do we keep ruining things? It's probably not as good.
I mean, it doesn't have 76 wins and 58 nominations.
My point exactly.
But, you know, if you want to see slang in English, there's that.
Fuck you, learn how to read.
In either case, if you do like the film, there is a novel that this movie's based on.
Well, that's cool.
Came out in 2004, and it's of the same name. But I think the most interesting part about that is that it's written by the same guy who wrote the script for the movie.
Oh, that's really nice.
I believe it was his, I want to say, first screenplay.
And that's impressive.
Did a good job on it. And that other film I mentioned him writing, Borders, is I think another one of his own novels. Mm,
okay.
Which I've also heard is really good. But that's all I have right now.
Okay. Well, before we go, I just wanted to talk about this. You know, I know it's like cold out. It's wintertime. It's like Christmassy vibes. You know, this movie's set in Sweden. So hopefully it's like a chill, like cold, scary movie. You know, a good chill wintertime horror film.
I mean, there's snow. Is that what you count as a wintertime horror film?
Well, I mean, like, you know, hopefully there's like some shenanigans to do with the cold, you know?
Snow.
Well, snow, but also other stuff, Ben. I don't know. I feel like we haven't watched a good winter horror movie yet for the podcast. That wasn't explicitly Christmas. You know what I mean?
The Thing.
Yeah, but that's less...
It's literally all snow and ice.
Mm.
You just weren't thinking about it, were you?
Mm.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
You ready to go to the movie?
I guess. Hi, everybody. We just finished watching Let the Right One in.
Yes, and Did I get that right? The right title this time.
Thank God.
Except it's not in Swedish, but...
Yeah, well, I don't know the Swedish title, and I'm not going to even try to pronounce it.
Okay, fair enough.
It's not worth it.
What do you think? Do you like it? Didn't like it? So-so?
Let me just put it this way. There's a reason this movie won 76 or whatever, or 56, something like that.
It was like 76 awards and 58 nominations.
A ludicrous amount of rewards, okay? There's a reason this movie won an insane amount of awards. And so, I will start with, I thought it was a good movie. But that does not mean I necessarily liked all the choices they made. Does that make sense?
Fair enough. And I guess we'll get into that in a second.
Yep.
Until then, I guess it's down to me to do our usual spiel, which is, you know, we're going to talk about this film, and we're going to give spoilers, but we'd recommend you go watch it
without spoilers. For sure, for sure.
This film is definitely good if you can go in as blind as possible.
I'm glad we went in as blind as we did.
Well, you did.
Well, yeah, sure.
So, highly recommend you go watch it, because I do think it was pretty good. With that being said, if you're still on the fence, I'm going to give a brief, like, description, and then we'll get into the actual spoiler territory. But kind of the idea behind this film is about this kid named Oscar, and he lives in Sweden, and it's snowing a lot. You know, long story short, he is pretty much a loner, mm-hmm. like heavily bullied. It's implied that he has no friends, and it's in the 80s, so it is Stephen King bullying. Mm-hmm. Not great. And one day, a new person moves into like the apartment next door named Eli. And he starts to make friends. That's the story.
That is the plot of this movie.
If that sounds good, check it out. With that being said, we are actually going to get into it now, so spoilers ahead. Anything you want to start with?
Yeah, we can start with something that I alluded to in the pre-movie. This movie is very like...
The pre-movie? You mean right then, a couple seconds ago?
No, before we watched the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the pre-movie, before we watched the movie. I guess it is for the audience a couple seconds ago, huh? Well, the thing I was just talking about a minute ago, this movie's cold and desolate and icy because it's Sweden, but also something we had not considered, this movie is in the vampire category. In countries like that, it's dark a lot.
Yeah, they're so far up north that it's mostly nighttime.
A lot of the time. Which means vampire shenanigans is so easy to get away with because there's no sun. Which I thought was fun. I thought it was really interesting.
I think that's fair. I want to make it clear that it's not either the time of year or an area where it's night all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I assume they just have shorter days.
Yeah, probably. So,
essentially, like, we see when Oscar's, like, leaving from school, it's already, like, dark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, I think, what you're trying to get at.
Yeah, basically, the location they've chosen, because it's nighttime for longer and more often, the vampire has a lot more free will and is able to do a lot more than I thought they were going to be able to do.
That's fair. And I mean, I think that's a really good choice for this movie, at least from a cinematography standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
Because the thing about snow, if you don't know this, when it's really, really white, it's very reflective
mm-hmm.
and it's very bright. So there's this nice like dichotomy between the day sequences in this film that are just like explosions of like bright light in your face. And the night sequences, which are very much shadowed, but still visible.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that's a good switch off for like the night and day sequences of the vampire stuff and the human stuff. Along a similar track of like the feeling of this film, I think it's also important to mention that it's set not in the modern day,
mm-hmm.
or at the very least not in like 2008 or 2004 when the source material is made. It's set somewhere in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard for us to tell because it's...
They're not specific about it.
They're not specific about it, and it's also Sweden.
Yeah.
And Sweden in the 80s does not look like America in the 80s.
Yeah.
In fact, it looks a lot more, I don't know, 70s, mm-hmm. maybe 60s. It's definitely early 80s. And that's definitely a really cool thing.
No, it is a cool choice because I didn't notice it until we were a pretty good chunk into the movie. And you said you only noticed it because you looked at a car.
Yeah, there's a car in one of the first sequences that you look at, and it's like, that is old. And, you know, I think there's a good point of just they're very subtle with it. All the cars look mostly period. The buildings look mm-hmm. pretty 80s.
All the clothes.
But the clothes are the big one. Once again, Sweden and stuff, not exactly sure how stuff transfers over, but everything looks really dated, and I thought they did a great job with that. Especially, like, background stuff, like mm-hmm. all the different advertisements and stuff.
The posters, the signage.
At one point, we were watching the movie, and I went, look, it's a golf sticker.
Haven't seen that gas station in a long time.
Yeah. So I thought that all that was really cool, and it's, I think, also a great tie-in for, you know, a vampire film? Because having things set in the modern era tends
it's
to be
a bit tough.
When you're dealing with supernatural elements. And this kind of gave the film, I think, the layer of believability it needed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the 80s. Of course, it's harder to keep track of things like vampires and killings and stuff like that.
Well, also, I think the added benefit of putting it in like Sweden, where stuff is sort of spread out and isolated in a certain way, helped a lot. Because like there were lots of excuses on why bodies weren't being found or things were being hidden and stuff like that. And I think that that worked.
I mean, the whole film's covered in like feet of snow. Like, yeah. Multiple feet of snow.
And stuff gets hidden under that. And it's really good. I think the next thing I want to talk about is this movie is so slow.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to bring up here, because it's probably my biggest disclaimer with this film.
Yeah.
Is, you said earlier that you could see how this won like 76 awards.
Yep.
And like 58 nominations. And it's because it's essentially like an artsy film.
It is. Like, it is.
It doesn't feel like an art house film in the same sense that, I don't know. What's a film that we watched that was super artsy that didn't really have a lot of plot? I don't want to say Suspiria because you're going to get mad at me. But it's not like that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's really not.
There's an actual plot. It's just so much of the film is about like how it's shot and framed, and there's very little dialogue. And it just makes the film feel so slow.
But I think that it works because, I'm going to be honest, a lot of what makes this film so good is the framing and the setup and the cinematography. Like, yeah, the dialogue is good and the acting is good, but it's like I'm getting so much emotion and feeling from just the shots of the movie. It's insane. Like, we have not watched a film like this in a long time where it's like, I'm looking at a shot from the film and I'm being conveyed exactly how I should feel.
Yeah.
Because of the music and the way it's shot and what I'm looking at. It's so hard to like convey such deep emotion through just images like that.
No, I think it's definitely really well done. In fact, I think I mentioned this during the movie where I was like, this feels kind of like watching The Shining, where there's so much attention to detail and you can really feel like the emotions that the director's trying to get through from the actual scenery itself.
It just has such strong tone, and it knew exactly what it was going for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it works really well for this vampire film.
Yeah.
Setting something in the middle of Sweden is fairly, like, unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the film does a really good job of showing this, but, like, the snow muffles all the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So the film's very silent, even during its like high octane violent sequences.
I was going to say, one of the most violent sequences in the entire film, there's no sound at all. And you're looking at something as things go horribly wrong around it. And it's really good.
But for, you know, all that benefit of pacing that I think it handles very well. Again, it's slow, like painfully slow.
It's slow and also an hour and 50 minutes.
Yeah. So I think we touched on this. Me and Bob are fairly tired right now. I've been up for almost 12 hours at this point. And that obviously affects, like, kind of how we're viewing these movies. And I have to say the first 30 minutes of this film, it was really rough for me because nothing happens, really. It's a lot of establishing shots and stuff. Maybe two or three pieces of dialogue in the first 10 minutes. And I think that's, I don't want to say it's a problem, but it's a very hard thing to have at the beginning of your movie to sit through if you're not into, like, slower films.
Yeah, that's fair.
The movie definitely picks up as it unfolds, and I think by the end, I was really, really into it. Like, it definitely caught my attention, but I do think that was a struggle that people might have, especially with the early parts of this movie.
That's totally fair, and I get that as a gripe. But I'll be honest, I think by the end, the beginning becomes worth it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just something that you're just going to have to bite it if you're going to watch this movie.
Yeah, and to be honest, I love the way they handled it, but it's more one of those things of, I don't know who I could show this to.
That's fair.
Because there's such a big buy-in if this isn't your type of film.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I said, I think they handle everything really well. And one of the things I think this film does really, really good alongside that slower pacing is weaving little clues into the background of the movie to kind of like give you information about what's happening. Because, you know, we've established this is based on a novel. So in a novel, you're able to like tell your audience more about the characters like directly.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. This movie would go crazy as a novel.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of stuff that isn't explained in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, most characters' backgrounds, the situations they're in, everything isn't told. It's shown in this film. And so much of it is heavily implied by like context clues or little like snippets of information you get early on in the background of the film. For instance, like the first time we learn there's like some murders going on around because, you know, hint, hint, this is a vampire movie. People are dying. It's just like the second line of the film where we hear a teacher talking in the background about just people being burnt in a fire locally after they were killed. And there's like a ton of little stuff like that. There's the classic idea of vampires not being able to come into places they're not invited into.
Yep.
And so the vampire character in this film has to get invited into buildings. And you can hear it happen when they're off screen sometimes before they walk onto screen. And I think that's just a great example of just little things being such tightly, not only written, but shot.
Yeah, they do a great job of that. Like, there's so much setup and stuff for even some of the kills. While there aren't, like, a ton of kills in this movie, I do think what we are given is really good, if not great. Like, there's a moment where the vampire character climbs into a tree, and we watch it happen. And then, I don't know, 5-10 minutes later, somebody walks past that tree and gets annihilated because the vampire's still in the tree. And we'd forgotten about that because it's been 5-10 minutes, you know what I mean? Like, there's just so much good continuity stuff like that that makes the world feel so real and grounded. And I'll admit, this movie isn't necessarily scary, but I would still say it's a horror movie because it, like, there's a certain level of tension that comes with the film because of the environment and where we are.
Yeah, the film's definitely a character piece.
Oh, 100%.
Like it's about Eli and Oscar, but it's a horror film, A, because there is some graphic stuff in it.
Yeah.
But more because, like, a lot of the themes in this film are really dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to kind of jump away from this because you mentioned the kills in this movie.
Yeah.
I kind of have mixed feelings on them.
Really?
Just for the simple fact that, like, this isn't a gripe for me, but I think I should point it out here. This film's from 2008, and I think that the kills we get are really well done,
yeah,
and very well framed and executed. But the effects sometimes in this film aren't great. They tried to, like, I think, do everything for, like, the smallest budget they had. But I imagine doing a lot of the setting stuff for, like, the backgrounds of shots was very expensive.
Oh, it had to be.
Because they had to recreate, like, this 80s aesthetic. And even though I think they did, like, a great job with some of the effects during the kills, it definitely shows that it's a 2008 film, especially on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's fair.
There's two, like, corpses that are very obviously, like,
mannequins.
A mannequin.
Yeah.
Or there's some CGI effects on Eli, who I don't think we've mentioned to this point, is our vampire. Or some cats.
I think the cats are pretty egregious, honestly.
It just doesn't look great nowadays.
Yeah.
But it's like a... It stands out because the rest of this film is
so good.
So good. And it's like the one thing that I look at it and I'm like, ooh. But it is admittedly all, I think, really great for the time
period. It's great for the period. Yeah, that's the thing. I have a question.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the amount of like blood and guts and gore and violence?
I was totally fine with it.
Okay.
Blood in this film was used more as a motif.
Yeah, for sure.
It's
a vampire movie. What do you expect?
I know, but sometimes in a vampire film, it'll be bloody and it'll be gory. And just kind of like horror schlock. This film in a lot of ways reminds me of like gothic vampire horror. Where most of it's like to emphasize different things about our vampiric character. So oftentimes, most of the blood we'll see is just like blood on Eli's face.
Mm-hmm.
To like show them like dirtying themselves, or we see blood coming out of their eyes at one point, so it looks like they're crying.
Yeah.
So I thought all that was pretty good.
Okay. I was just curious if you thought it was enough.
Yeah.
I also thought it was enough, but I could see someone coming into this movie with like no idea what it's about and going vampire movie and expecting more of it and wanting more violence and stuff. But I think what they did was a good amount.
Yeah, I think you could have very easily gone too far. And this film doesn't.
Because I think the big thing about this movie is, and what I think what makes it so good, is it's not what you expect from a vampire piece. It is a slow, methodical character piece about
kids,
which is so weird. Like, yeah, that's the movie. And it's just so weird to come into a film and have that be like what you're looking at when you're thinking of vampire movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the biggest draw of this film. It's about children.
Yeah.
Which is kind of bizarre to think about, because it's not often in like horror or vampire stories that you see a focus on children.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say there isn't films or books that have children in them that are like vampire stories. In fact, I can name a couple stories that are like vampire focused that have vampire children in them. I believe Interview with a Vampire is an example of that.
Oh, wow.
But it's not often that they're the main focus mm-hmm. of the film. And it's kind of honestly a really interesting thing to explore.
It's really cool.
Because, you know, the whole idea behind vampires, I think for a lot of people, is it's like, oh, you're eternally young, and that's great. But Eli's 12, or as they like to say,
About 12.
And that has, like, all its own implications and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because I think there's this really cool thing where Eli doesn't feel like they're super old.
Mm-hmm.
They still mentally feel like they're 12 years old.
Yeah.
And it just makes the story very, very interesting.
It does. It makes it very, very different, I guess.
Than what you'd normally expect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not to say you aren't getting the classic vampire elements that we've come to expect from vampire stories. That is to say, romance. Because this is such a romantic film.
Oh,
essentially.
Yeah.
It's very much about the relationship between Oscar and Eli. And it's very, I don't want to say sexual, because
mm-hmm.
they're 12, but it's very, like, in-depth
mm-hmm.
and intense.
I would say intimate.
Intimate's probably the best word for it, which is, I think, handled very well.
It is. It's really good.
Especially because this film's super gay.
Oh, extremely.
You know, I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that, well, we haven't mentioned it so far, but Eli's gender's, like, I guess the best word would be in question.
Yeah.
Like, they're never super explicit about it. And I think at one point you said they were wearing a sweater.
At one point they're wearing a sweater that has the trans flag, like, the trans flag's colors on it.
Yeah. And, you know, when you have that combined with Oscar, who's very clearly a boy, there's definitely some implications there. But I think they handle it really well.
Yeah.
Both in, like, how they shot the film, but also some of the dialogue.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really good.
Like, they're hanging out, and I think Eli says, "Would you still like me if I wasn't a girl?"
Yep.
Which is kind of, like, the first indication of it. They also do some cool things with casting. I don't know if you could tell. The actor who plays Eli is a woman. Like, it's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
But the voice is a different voice actor.
Oh.
It's like a boy, I believe.
I didn't know that.
To kind of give that androgynous appearance.
Hmm.
Part of that does come from some backstory stuff. It's not really addressed in the movie except for
I was about to say, is this all book stuff, basically?
A quick shot. But I had to pick up on some stuff because when I'm doing notes.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding, because I didn't want to spoil this film for myself, but my understanding is Eli was, like, castrated.
Oh.
As whatever they're from.
That sucks.
But also, they're in the movie, it looks like everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, moving aside, I thought they handled all the emotional stuff very well between the two characters.
No, they did.
I guess the point I'm trying to get at.
And I think that's what makes the movie so good.
Especially for a book written in 2004.
In 2008 movie, this is highly progressive.
Yeah. And it's a really cool kind of parallel with, again, the fact that this is set in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're led to believe that, okay, Oscar's bullied because he's different. Just because he's, like, strange. But this is another way he's different and doesn't fit in. Aside from that, you know, main storyline between the two main characters, there's a couple weird background stories going on that I think the film handles well because they're not the point of the movie. Like, there's just a couple different things happening with side characters where we don't really see them fully explained, but they're still there, and we cut to them in between the actual important parts of the film. And I just thought that was handled interesting.
Well, I think that what they do is they make the world feel more real, which makes the character piece element of this movie a lot stronger because it makes the characters feel like they're in a real place, in a real world, which just, it really brings it all together and makes it feel contained.
No, and you're 100% right, and I think that was a strength of the film, but it was kind of this interesting thing where, because like Oscar and Eli don't care about these characters, we as the audience really didn't get to see much. So like my really go-to example is about Oscar's parents.
Yeah.
Like you have to, like, through the few scenes you have of them, figure out they're divorced. The dad is
gay, I think.
At the very least, probably an alcoholic.
That too.
And the mom is trying, but definitely not there.
Yeah.
There's this group of friends that live in the area, and they definitely seem to be struggling with some, I'd guess, what, financial issues?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe some spousal abuse going on over there.
Maybe.
One guy's an animal hoarder.
One guy just has about 45 cats.
There's our Stephen King bullies.
Yeah.
And there's some, like, great implications of, like, the cycle of bullying, where, like, kids are being forced to do it because it's me or him. I don't know. I thought it was all cool to have these little background things you had to pick up on.
Well, because all of them feel like self-contained plot points that become no longer self-contained when they end. They feel like their own story for the entire film, and then when they finally wrap up and it ties everything together, it's honestly quite perfect.
Yeah, and it's just, I like the way it's done because in a different film, those would have been focused on more heavily.
Or they just wouldn't have existed.
In this film, they're allowed to be in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really cool.
No, I think my favorite side plot is the one with Virginia, because that is just like a crazy one. I don't want to get into it too much, but essentially, you know, it's vampirism. Just so happens that shit spreads and a character becomes a vampire and does not like it and has to deal with those repercussions. And that is such an interesting thing to look at when you're looking at the original, like, vampire in Eli and how they feel about being a vampire. You know what I mean? Like, it, the dichotomy there is just so strong and so good, and it works.
Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of this film deals with morality issues.
Yeah.
Eli doesn't want to kill.
No, the first time we see Eli kill a person, they literally start crying. They don't want to do it.
And on the flip side, we have Oscar, who is maybe a bit troubled.
Yeah.
And idolizes it in a little ways at the beginning of the film. You know, I think that's a really interesting thing to explore with this, you know, vampiric topic of focus.
Well, especially because the characters are so young and these are very adult topics.
Oh, yeah. Again, it comes back to the fact that they're 12 and their brains aren't fully developed and they act like 12-year-olds.
Yep. And seeing a 12-year-old react to some of these things is not only interesting, but kind of mind-opening in certain ways. Because it's like, oh, that's the thought process, right? Something I'd never really considered.
And so, again, going back to, like, the Virginia thing, it's interesting to see how a child handles the situation versus
and how an adult does it.
An adult.
The adult is so good. That might be my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Well, it's done really well.
It's so good.
But, you know, the thing we've kind of been jumping around this whole time is kind of what type of vampire Eli is.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's, for me, it's probably one of the last big things I want to talk about here. But I mean, I think it's in a vampire film, it's always important to, like, discuss that because how a vampire works always changes some of the implications of your story.
Sure.
And I think one of the more interesting facts about Eli is that when we see them become more feral, I guess would be the word, we get to see the mask of, like, young innocence drop. For instance, I think they just kind of made them look, like, old and, like, starved.
Yeah, let's say it kind of gave them, like, wrinkles.
And I thought that was really, really interesting. But, you know, the coolest part about this whole vampire thing is that it is a very much a classic vampire, so they can't go out in the sun. But, you know, the coolest thing is they can't go into rooms they haven't been invited in. In fact, there's, like, this great scene where they do.
It's not good.
It is not good, and it's really, really cool. But I bring that up because that's, like, where the movie gets its
title
from. It's let the right one in, and that's not only an implication of, like, okay, you have to let this person in. But the film's, like, about people letting others into their heart, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think, what, the first thing Eli says to Oscar is, I can't be friends with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's super cool to have your creature reflect your story.
No, it is. It's the best use of, like, the classic vampire thing of, like, they can't... Like, it. I think it handles that idea so much better than any other vampire film we've watched. Because the other vampire film would just be like, oh, you can't come in. Oh, I just can't come in here. I'm safe. Well, that's boring. Isn't it?
Yep.
So in this, it's like, oh, there are repercussions to letting someone in. Like, the vampire coming in without being invited. And bad things happen. But also then tying that back into your main plot and, like, making it all thematically relevant is really, really good.
Yeah. I just think it was really well done.
I just really like this movie. Yeah. It's a very good movie.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No.
Honestly? Okay. Except for I'll mention this. The ending of this movie, great.
It's so good.
Both the final act and the little, like, vignette at the end are both impactful and touching, and I thought it was a great way to end this film. With that being said, I guess, do you want to do recommendations now?
Sure. You want a movie set in Sweden? This is a Swedish movie. It's a really good movie. Good Swedish film. If you want a movie set in the cold, in the snow, that's like, feels sort of isolationist and, like, I don't know, sad? It's somber is the word I'll use. I don't want to say sad because it's not really that sad, but it's very, like, monotone and, like, just sort of chill and, like, I don't know.
I think somber was a good term.
Yeah. You got a movie about kids. The two main characters in this film are kids, and they do a really, really good job.
Yeah, we don't talk about this enough, but child acting's hard.
It's hard.
And I can tell why they spent a year trying to get these actors.
Because they're good. They're really good. If you want a movie about vampires, this is a great, interesting take on vampires. I'm so glad we watched this for vampires. This is a great choice. I think that's it.
All right. I mean, I think I have basically the same ones as you. If you want to see a European film, especially from a country that I don't think gets a lot of traditional, like, viewing, like, people aren't really familiar with Swedish films. So this is kind of a cool one to check out. You want a film set somewhere cold and, like, isolated. The go-to is always, I think, The Thing in the horror community. But, I mean, this is very much a lot of the same stuff. They're in the middle of Sweden. It's ice and snow everywhere. Lots of open space. Not a lot of people. If you want a good vampire film, this one's great. Like, I just love it as a vampire film. You want a film that focuses on younger characters and, like, the relationships. I also think that's really great. But I think kind of my biggest recommendation for this film is if you just kind of want something that's very artsful and more focused on characters than maybe necessarily, like, plot or action, I think it's great. It's trying to tell a story, and it goes as far as it can to do that in the best way possible. Rate it.
I don't know. I don't know how to feel. I mean, I know how to feel. But I don't know how... No. I'm not doing this. I'm going to give it a 5.
Yeah, I was like, what are you debating
here? I'm not going to fucking do this to myself right now. I'm giving this movie a 5. You didn't catch it. This movie just made me cry.
Did it?
I got really close. This movie's really touching and really sweet. And I think it is... It encapsulates, like, exactly what I want in a vampire movie in a lot of ways. Does that, like, I don't know how else to put that, but, like, there wasn't a ton of, like, gore or gut, blood and guts like you would expect in, like, a more modern vampire film. It felt very clean and sort of methodical and, what is the word, like, sanitized in the way that something like Dracula is?
Yeah, I mean, again, I likened it to gothic horror earlier, but I think in a lot of ways it's a story that shows the themes associated with the vampire genre rather than the spectacle associated with the vampire genre.
Which I think is why it deserves a 5, because I think that's incredibly difficult. Like, insanely difficult when you're not going, like, hardcore in the direction of blood and guts and, like, killing shit. And I think that doing that with children actors also is insane. This movie deserves a lot of the praise it got. I think it's really, really incredible.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm going to give it a 5-star. It's great.
It deserves it, yeah. I was debating. I was like, 4.5.
I don't know how you could give it a 4.5. Like, I could see this not being your movie.
I could nitpick, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know
but
what
it's,
I mean?
It's just so well done. With that being said, I guess we're going to go to outtakes now.
Yeah, yeah. We marked quite a bit this time, I think.
We'll see if we keep them.
Well, yeah, we'll see if we keep them.
But we'll be back in a second.
Yeah, see you guys in a minute.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the outtake section for this episode of Beware the Board. I hope you're enjoying our review of Let the Right One In so far. I really love this movie. I think it's absolutely beautiful and very, very good. But without further ado, let's get into the outtakes. This first clip is our reaction to just how good the framing of some of these scenes is.
I think Al Delfino might die in a second. I feel like he's about to get vampired.
I mean, you see it, right?
See what?
You don't see it?
What am I supposed to... Oh, shit. Oh, my God. What the fuck? Why is it... Oh! Something has happened. Yeah, you're about to fucking die, bozo.
Could be a dead person.
No, she said, please help me. It's not a dead person. She's talking.
Well, if it's a vampire...
It is a dead person. You're right. I'm sorry.
This next clip is our realization that the vampirism is starting to spread.
Ooh, interesting. She lived.
That's why they're killing everyone.
Oh, shit.
So I think if you feed from someone directly, so it must be like the venom in the mouth.
I guess.
Which is, that's usually like.
Oh, no. Ah, no, 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 no.
Yes.
No.
Open the blind.
Oh, shit. Ah, no, 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 no. You're going to fucking explode.
Not explode, just like burn themselves.
I was kind of expecting it to like her just go up in flames, bro. I was really scared for a second. I was terrified.
This is I didn't go to a hospital.
Yeah.
This next clip is our reaction to a vampire in the film deciding that they finally had enough.
Oh, he's going to open the window. God.
I think she died.
No. She's just kind of, like, out of it.
No, I think she did. I think she did just straight up die because they didn't give her any blood.
She's gonna rip his throat out.
Oh, no, see? She's alive.
I told you. She's faking.
Oh, no.
She wants to die.
No! She did say she wanted to die earlier. Holy fuck!
That's good.
Oh, my God! What is it? What is up with this movie?
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the outtakes. Do we have any announcements, Ben?
Well, we got Christmas stuff coming up.
Crimbo is next week, right? As of this
25th,
coming out?
Right.
I think it'll be the week after this comes out will be Christmas week.
It's whatever. It's the 25th, right?
Whatever day Christmas is.
I think
is.
That's Christmas. Otherwise, you know, we're also having a New Year's film that's
at
coming out on probably, I guess, technically the 1st.
Midnight of the 1st.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, usual spiel. Check us out wherever you get podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, other podcast-specific platforms. If you're checking us out on any of those, please give us a quick rating or review. That really helps us out with being seen there. But if you really want to like help us out with spreading the podcast, you know, recommend us to a friend. You know, it's important to share like how you're feeling with your friends and things you appreciate, like puzzles, and I think this podcast could be that for you guys.
Rubik's cubes.
Otherwise, you could also check us out on YouTube, which, while not the best for audio only content, is pretty nice to show us some support. You know, we can see all your likes and subscriptions and stuff, and we really appreciate that. With that being said, YouTube does have a couple cool tools you might be interested in. There's a bell button, which lets you get notified whenever we post something new in case we're posting something out of our usual scheduled format, such as our holiday episodes. And then there's also a search button, which lets you search our channel for key terms in all our videos, such as like a movie title. So if you want to see what we're watching, maybe check it out that way. With that being said, The big thing with YouTube is it's one of the two major places to communicate with us at. You can do that in the comment section of a specific episode if there's something you want to talk to us about there. Or you can go over to Twitter, at BewareTheBoard, and ask Bob if you can come into his DMs and talk to him about your favorite horror film.
You can request. I may accept or deny. We will see. I'll get to see the message first. I can preview those. Like Ben said, check us out on Twitter, at BewareTheBoard. It's where we post updates about the show, information about the show. Basically, if there's anything you know about the show, it goes on our Twitter. On Mondays, I post a spoiler post for that week's worth of episodes, which is a hidden movie cover you can reveal, so you can watch the film before we do. So whatever you listen to episodes, you don't get any spoilers or being vague about stuff you know what we're talking about. Then on Fridays or whatever other day the episode goes live, I always post a link to the episode on our Twitter. So if you've missed an upload or want to know what's going up, there's always a link there. Last thing, we do short form content for the show over on at BewareTheBoard on TikTok and on YouTube Shorts. So if you want to support the show and like short form content, check us out over there at BewareTheBoard on TikTok and on YouTube Shorts. Ben?
I think that's it.
That's it.
We'll see you guys next time.
We'll see you guys next time.